Hello, folks. Welcome. This is Pastor Butch Paul. It is the 22nd day of December 2021, and I am sitting in today from Elder Hedstrom. As you know, she is normally with us on most days of the week, but I think Wednesday's going to be mine for a while now. This is a discount gold and silver. It really is. But this is financial survival, and I'm glad you're with us today, and I do mean that. I hope you've all had a good day. And we're going to do our best today to fill in and do what we can to bring the news and information to you the best we understand it. To share things with you may help you understand what's happening. And who knows, maybe I might give you some insight on something that maybe help you in the future to make some plans for what's coming. I don't know, but we're going to do our best. So Melody isn't here, of course, obviously. And I think she's trying to get a lot of things done as fast as she can. And I don't blame her. I mean, sometimes, folks, you need some time off to do other things. You know that. We'll get started today, as always, with the price of precious metals, and all the metals had a good day today, actually. Gold was up $15.40 to $18.05.50. Silver was up 30 cents to $22.80. I'm amazed it stayed in the 22 level for this long, I really am. Platinum's up 29 to $9.74. Palladium's up 87 to $19.72, so all the metals had a good day today, and so did the markets, believe it or not. This is I thought was kind of interesting. The Dow was up 227 to 35,720. NASDAQ up 143 to 15,484. S&P up 39 to 46,88. Oil was up 243 to 72,86. And all the foreign markets, all of them were up. Nikkei, FTSE, Hang Seng, DAX, all of them were up today. The markets did good basically worldwide today. That's why I was shocked to see gold and silver up that much and metals up period that much. And a comment on the oil, you know, it's amazing. As you know, the oil dropped from down about $80 down to 68 over the last few weeks. Now it's back up to 72. And gasoline in our area dropped one penny. One penny. With a $12 drop per barrel of oil, our price here dropped by 1 cent. I do believe they tend to rip us off a little bit as long as they possibly can, and they have no shame in it. So I just sit back and watch. If gasoline went up $1.50, our price would go up the next day. It drops 12, 15 bucks a barrel, our price would stay the same for weeks, if not months, and then maybe drop a penny or two. That is amazing. But that's called a monopoly, I guess you could say. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are different branches, I guess, of stations where you buy your gas. You know, I don't care who may be, Exxon, BP, and all those. But they pretty much work in unison around the world to keep prices where they want them. That's quite obvious. And production going up or going down, it does make a difference. But they lash together and do the same thing to keep prices where they want them. That's called a monopoly, folks. And moving on to some other news, we knew this would start happening sooner or later, and it's happening right now. China and Russia are ready to end U.S. dominance of global finance. Now, we know the dollar is dropping in popularity around the world, dropping in value around the world. Yes, some places still, most countries still deal in it to a point, but some nations in Russia and China, especially China, are huge economic powerhouses, and they're going to do their best to take away the dollar hegemony and bring it to its knees, so to speak. Russian President Vladimir Putin held extensive talks with his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping earlier this week, with the two world leaders agreeing on plans to establish a new shared international financial framework. Russia and China have been gradually moving towards such an arrangement since the global financial crisis of 2008 revealed the risk of excessive reliance on the U.S. However, American economic sanctions against both Moscow and Beijing appear to have intensified the search for alternatives. Folks, you cut off supplies to nations, they're going to look for alternatives. These type of sanctions, and sanctions always have, caused wars. That's what made Japan attack Pearl Harbor. And I won't get time to get into all that. It's happened many, many times. You sanction a country to the point that people are hurting, it will cause wars. The American-centric financial architecture is an immense source of power. Most international trade is conducted in U.S. dollars. The transfer of payments goes through the SWIFT transaction system, in which the country has immense sway, while financing derives from U.S.-led investment banks. Debt is ranked by U.S. ratings agencies, and even the main credit cards are American. These economic instruments of power enable Washington to run an empire. It can manage huge trade deficits, collect data on its adversaries, give favorable treatment to allies, and crush its adversaries with sanctions. The U.S.-centric financial architecture is no longer sustainable. Now, folks, let's repeat that. The U.S. financial architecture is no longer sustainable. That will affect your wallet. The White House has lost control over its negative trade imbalance. Debt is spiraling out of control, and rampant inflation is destroying the currency. Making matters worse, Washington is using its financial architecture as a foreign policy tool by imposing sanctions on its adversaries. U.S. security strategy confirmed that China and Russia are the main two states in Washington crosshairs, which makes it imperative for Moscow and Beijing to establish an alternative financial architecture decoupled from the U.S. If China and Russia manage to decouple from the dollar, I promise you the rest of the world will follow as quickly as possible. As I said, they no longer have the economic instruments to run the American empire. Folks, let me remind you, if you've ever done studying history, empires tend to grow sometimes pretty rapidly, but what their end is always very cruel, so to speak. They come down hard. Empires, when they're brought to the knees, are destroyed in many different ways. But America can no longer sustain its financial power, if you will, worldwide. It's finally caught up to us. The fiat currency that we all trusted for so many years, it's bringing us to our knees. Now, yes, the world's on fiat currency, that's true. But they depend on ours, and they have, because we were at one time the most stable. That's changing very quickly. And poor old Biden, Sleepy Joe, bless his heart. I don't like what the man does or who he is, but I do sometimes do feel sorry for him, because he was pushed into an office he's not prepared for. He doesn't run the office, as you know. He's a puppet, as most presidents have been, including Trump, like or not. I don't care if he's like or not, it's true. But Trump may have made some moves on his own in some areas, but believe me, he was controlled. They can't let an individual in the White House that isn't controlled to some extent. But anyway, Biden says gas prices are coming down to historic averages. There's just one problem, however. National average gas prices at the pump are down about 10 cents from their highs since all-conquering President Biden unleashed his cunning SPR release plan to ease the pain of it in American pocketbooks. Now, I don't know where it dropped 10 cents. It didn't drop 10 cents where we are at all. Furthermore, President Biden gloated that shelves are only empty because of that highly wanted gift, and added that gas prices are coming down to historic averages. So let's go to the data. The average price for gas over the past 20 years is $2.77, which means $3.29 Biden's price for Americans is 19% above average. It turns out gas prices at the pump follow a more or less predictable seasonal pattern, and the current price of U.S. gas has never, ever been higher for this time of year. And while this will be hard to swallow for some people, gas prices are 29% above the average price for this time of year. So, folks, when the president says something, you need to do a fact check. It doesn't take a lot of time to do a fact check. I mean, just look at your pumps. Remember a year ago, the gas prices are higher this time of year than they ever have been. And that doesn't surprise me at all. Inflation's inflation. The dollar's dropping in value. It's just inflation. When countries no longer want to trade in dollars, they don't mind if the prices go up in our end. That didn't bother them any. They're using inflated dollars to pay their bills also. So this is some being surprised. Inflation is what it is. And as long as we deal in currency that is backed by nothing and worth nothing, inflation will continue and only increase in volume and speed. It's just, we've lost it, my friends, ever since the 19, ever since Federal Reserve was when it was brought into being about 1913, we've lost it very quickly. See, according to our Constitution, Congress is supposed to set the value of a dollar in accordance with an ounce of gold. Congress has no power over the dollar at all any longer. Well, they may spend it and pass bills to spend more of it, but they have nothing to do with creating the dollar. The Federal Reserve, which is a private banking entity, private bankers, and many of them foreign bankers, many foreign banks own interest in the American dollar through the Federal Reserve. Should that tell us something? Why do you think the founders decide they want our dollar controlled by American people, by elected officials, American citizens? Why do you think they decide to do that? Do you think they may have some wisdom in that? Think about that. California, poor old California, they just can't learn. California rewards deadbeats once again with $80,000 cash giveaway to delinquent homeowners. Wow. California homeowners who are behind on the mortgage payments due to the pandemic or whatever are about to receive up to $80,000 per household in the form of direct payment to mortgage servicers. Folks, think about it. $80,000 will be a huge chunk paid on anybody's house to pay it off, wouldn't it? Huge chunk. The $1 billion program, funded by guess who? Taxpayers, as opposed to making homeowners tap into the massive equity gained in their homes while they weren't making payments, was approved by the U.S. Department of the Treasury and will apply to many as 40,000 struggling homeowners, according to the statement from Newsom's office. How long are we going to tolerate this nonsense? Are we keep supporting people who... This sounds cruel. If they can't work, we can't fix it. They lose their home. That is really sad. Nobody wants to lose their home. But we can't afford to keep every family in this country because they're out of work, and a lot of them don't want to work. That's the kicker, you see. Welfare doesn't distinguish between those who don't want to and those that can't. That's the kicker. Homeowners have fallen behind on their housing payments. It reads, no one should have to live in fear of losing the roof over their head. So we're stepping up to support struggling homeowners to get them the resources they need to cover past due mortgage payments. Newsom noted that renters and landlords had already received assistance. Renters and landlords, okay, what's that do with buying the house? How about the people loaning money to buy the homes? I don't know. But anyway, now a California Mortgage Relief Program, we're extending that relief to homeowners. The funding, which is allocated through the Federal American Rescue Plan Act, Act's Homeowner Assistance Fund, is provided as a one-time grant that qualified homeowners will not be required to repay. Have you all ever heard of the American Rescue Plans Act Homeowner Assistance Fund? I never heard of it. They, of course, by law, I suppose, open up another channel to feed our tax dollars into somebody else's hands. The American Rescue Plan Act's Homeowner Assistance Fund will give qualified homeowners a one-time grant they're not required to repay. California's at or below the 100% of their county's area minimum income who own a single-family home, condo, or manufactured home, and who faces pandemic-related hardships after January 21st, 2020, maybe eligible for the program. Folks, how long will we sit back and this? We can't stop it now. It's too big, too massive, too convoluted. We can figure this out if we wanted to now. It's just the way it is. We passed the line of no return as far as taking back control of the Congress and finances and ringing the Federal Reserve. That's never going to happen. They're going to push us right into oblivion financially, and they're doing it. Europe certifies crickets, worms, and grasshoppers as edible food amid soaring food prices. Well, okay. Across the world, households are experiencing an exponential rise in food inflation. This holiday season, from Brazil to China's European countries to U.S. households, will pay near record prices for food, which begs the question, are households able to afford traditional food or they resort to some substitutes to save money. You might be able to trade down on some things. Instead of the high-priced turkeys or steaks, you might consider something less expensive on that side of the dinner table. Kirk Covington, Senior Director of Institutional Credit at Ag America's Lending, which sends money to farmers, told Bloomberg. But there's no escaping it. Everything's on the holiday table. It's just going to be more expensive. For example, working poor Americans have had trouble affording essential goods amid rapid inflation. A staggering 6.8% surge in consumer costs is the highest in four decades, making things like food unaffordable because wages hadn't kept up with inflation. The same is happening for households worldwide. With that in mind, households are likely to substitute popular holiday foods with low-cost items. There's even a chance that some might resort to eating bugs and worms. European member states certified house crickets, yellow mealworms, and grasshoppers as a food fit to be sold at supermarkets. The bugs will be sold in frozen, dried, and powdered forms and will be packed with nutrients and low cost, according to Bloomberg. Earlier this month, the World Economic Forum published two articles explaining how people must get used to eating bugs. Those who can no longer afford meat, such as ham or turkey and other traditional holiday foods, will come to find a new substitute. Bloomberg provides examples from across the world of how food inflation crushes holiday cheer. I don't know that eating insects is necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, we never had to do that before. It would be something certainly new for people. I don't know. I mean, think about it. I have no idea. They sold insects for a long time on the market, you know, chocolate-covered grasshopper and different things. So I don't know. I never really had an appetite to think about that. But if somebody's hungry, they'll eat it. I know for sure from being in a Vietnam and Southeast Asia countries for a year, back in Thailand, Laos, Vietnam, they eat bugs with their rice. They did. I mean, rice beetles were a very good item they eat over there. They roast them inside a hollow pipe and pop them open and eat them. Believe me, it's nothing new in the world. And our turn may come and have to do that. But talk about human food falling short. I didn't know this yet. But I'm sure I have, since I have a dog that's spoiled rotten, he'll let me know pretty soon that he didn't like any food you buy. The pet food shortage is real, and owners are scrambling. It's been a waking nightmare. Your dog wants chicken and rice flavor, but has to make do with dry kibble because import and production holdups have hit dog food and cat food just like human food. After an online order didn't show in time, Phyllis Palmetta stopped at five different stores before she hit the pay dirt. There it was on the shelf, beef stew-flavored dog food. Miss Palmetta scooped up about four cans, which weren't her preferred brand. She was desperate. We'll get out the break, finish this article, folks. Even if we have to cut back on a dog's favorite food, pet's favorite food. Don't go away.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
All right, folks, let's get back into it again. We're talking about shortage of food for humans and now for pets. And I do have a dog that's 16 years old. He showed up on my front porch. A guy dropped him off. I didn't know at the time. Dropped him off. He wasn't much bigger than a softball. It's a Shih Tzu Terrier mix. I did my best to get him away for a month. It didn't happen. We got attached to him. I didn't want a dog. I wanted to get $5 for him when I got him. I've got at least $3,000-$4,000 in him now over his last 16 years. And we buy dog food that's good for him. He's become part of the family. And he's a very persnickety eater. So, I don't know what's going to happen if we run out of certain dog foods. I guess we have to learn to eat what we have. But nonetheless, it's happened, I suppose. I just talked to a producer there and he noticed, he said his wife noticed that they're running out of pet foods in certain stores. But back to the article. Miss Pometta scooped up about 4 cans, which weren't her preferred brand. She was desperate with supplies of food she usually bought for a dog, nowhere to be found online or in stores. Karma, a Pomeranian rescue, wasn't as desperate. She sniffed the food and rejected it. Miss Pometta coaxed the dog to try it by adding beef-flavored treats, which gave Karma an upset stomach for days. After that, Miss Pometta said she resorted to making Karma's meals herself, cooking chicken with rice, carrots and peas on a stovetop, which Karma is happy to eat. It's hard enough to feeding 5 people, Miss Pometta said, referring to her family. I don't want to be making dog food. Well, unfortunately, if you got one and you get attached to him, like I have this little puppy, not only he's not a puppy, but he's a small animal, I named him Buddy because ever since he's been here, I had to watch where I step because he's always under my feet. I named him Buddy because he was my buddy, and You treat them like family because they become like family. So, yeah, there it is. And, you know, price hikes and food shortages are nothing new around the world, but the U.K. is really getting hammered on some things. U.K. natural gas prices hit new high, trigger market-wide crisis. The latest jump in U.K. natural gas prices has been called a national crisis by multiple energy firms, industry groups in the country. They're requesting the government protect customers and suppliers as critical Russian gas flows into Europe plunge. Nuclear outages in France and cold weather have sent gas prices to stratospheric levels. FT spoke with London site-listed Good Energy, EDF Energy, and the trade body, Energy UK, about the alarming situation in the country as the winter in the Eastern Northern Hemisphere begins. This is a national crisis. Wholesale gas and power prices have been increased to unprecedented levels over the last 3 weeks, creating an extremely difficult operating environment for many businesses in the industry, said Nigel Pocklington, CEO of Good Energy, a small renewable energy supplier. EDF Energy, the fourth largest supplier in Britain, said high natural gas prices are sending power prices skyrocketing and it's critical for the government to act now to support energy consumers. Emma Pinchbeck, chief executive of UK, said that Britain faces a market-wide crisis. Other year treasuries in Europe have already responded to the crisis, but in the UK, the energy sector is still asking if Chancellor knows that energy bills going up over 50% in the new year is a problem for ordinary people, businesses, and the economy. UK lawmakers are in panic mode to protect households by possibly capping power bills. The same is true for other politicians across Europe. Folks, yeah, our prices are going up. Energy, natural gas prices here, propane, it all went up here. Obviously, that's true. But not yet 50%. That's going to be a huge hit. And it's going to come here one day. And then maybe before this winter is over, I don't know. But it's going to come here. But I have noticed they said that the government may have to cap prices. somewhere on a supply chain, those cap prices will hurt somebody tremendously. It may not be the retailer, obviously. I mean, they cap the price unless that cost is passed on to him through his wholesaler, because the wholesaler didn't cap his price, or the wholesaler supplier didn't cap his price. But somebody's going to cap it, and somebody down the line is going to have to eat the difference. So, I mean, somebody's going to be losing money in this deal. When you cap prices, folks, and the supply that's where it's coming from, whether it be Russia or anywhere else, if their prices don't drop, then somewhere along the line, somebody's going to be hurting. Somebody's going to absorb that cost. And it can't be done forever. Back in the 70s, when I was still a young feller, Nixon capped prices because inflation was going up so high. Businesses couldn't raise prices no matter what the cost was. It just doesn't work that way very long. It can't. Government's the cause of the problem. Then they can't fix it by capping prices. Different topic, but right back to the same old story about the unvaccinated idiots, they call them. Airline CEO calls for unvaccinated idiots to be ostracized from society. You know, it's really something. I mean, flat in your face, you idiot. You're not vaccinated. You idiot. I want to even say about that. Michael O'Leary, the CEO of Ryanair, had declared that anyone who remains unvaccinated should be completely cut off from society, including not being able to travel, to go to the supermarket to get food, or the pharmacy to get medicine. They become a non-citizen, a non-entity. Just a burden on society, I guess you could say. If you're not vaccinated, you shouldn't be allowed in the hospital. You shouldn't be allowed to fly. You shouldn't be allowed on the London Underground. And you shouldn't be allowed in a local supermarket or your pharmacy either, the airline executive said. You can sit at home and, you know, get your deliveries of medicines and food, but you should not, you know, go to work or to go in, on public transport unless you've have a vaccine certificate. O'Leary admitted that making vaccines compulsory, now listen to this, folks, he admitted that making vaccines compulsory is an infringement of your civil liberties, but added that the way around it is, you simply make life so difficult. You make it that there are lots of things that you can't do unless you're vaccinated. So it's an infringement upon your civil liberties to make you take a shot, to come in and give it to you and force it on you, but it's not against your civil liberties to tell you, if you don't take, you can't eat. Well, this is good reasoning. Calling them vaccinated idiots, the Ryanair boss further stated, I don't think that governments should permit those people who are not vaccinated to go out and infect everybody else. You know, these people are either totally ignorant or really stupid. I'm going to go mostly with stupid in this case. I've always said that ignorance can be cured. Stupidity can't be cured. All the statistics from nations that have been vaccinated, including Israel and other nations, other places that have been vaccinated over 80%, the cases are going up among the vaccinated. Vaccinations are not working. Although, I shouldn't say that. They're working to do what they want them to do. They're killing people, making people sick. It's working very well. That's exactly why they're doing it. You don't believe me? Talk to Bill Gates. He'll tell you why they give out vaccinations and jabs. To cut the population. The WF wants us cut down to 7.5 billion worldwide. Why not force these things on people? Why not coerce them to the point if you don't buy, I mean, if you don't take the vaccine or if you don't take the jab, you can't buy or sell or eat? Something like the mark of the beast in the Bible, isn't it? Isn't it amazing? Something like the mark of the beast in the Bible. Is there any chance they might be preparing us for something in the future? Could that be a possibility? Think about that, okay? This next article, I think, will deserve some comments also. Aging Germany is running out of workers, putting Europe's largest economy at risk. Economists warn that a demographic cliff edge could mean a future of high prices, shortages, and even higher taxes. Germany has long been ahead of the curve as a source of technical innovation and manufacturing. Now it is leading much of the developed world toward a demographic cliff edge, that could put a damper on Europe's largest economy, raising pressure on its pension system and push inflation higher for years to come. Let me repeat that last part. Raising pressure on its pension system. Economists forecast that Germany's workforce could peak as soon as 2023 and then shrink by up to 5 million people by the end of the decade. While the pandemic has exacerbated the trend, it is an important impediment tournament of the baby boomers that is fueling the labor crunch, economists say. I'm going to have to comment that, folks. A common sense comment, I think, makes a lot of sense. In America, we have murdered 75 million citizens in the womb. We have allowed the murder of 75 million citizens in the womb. Why do you think they're letting illegals cross the border to keep population up, folks? They want population to grow, but not with American citizens. Why would they want to do that? Why would they want to undermine Americans' power as being a population that is growing on its own without bringing illegals? They can't find the workforce to replace those who are quitting. And, folks, they can't find it with the illegals either. It's not happening. 75 million citizens are not available there to work or to manufacture or to produce things that may save people's lives. They're not there. Germany's also had the same policy. Murder the children in the womb. So they're not replacing their population. I wonder why. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Why is their pension system going to fail? Who's going to pay into it? Whenever people quit paying in Social Security because of the murder of so many of them, when they can't pay any longer to sustain it, guess what's going to happen to retirements of people like myself and others, millions of others? We have murdered our children. We're not replacing enough to maintain our economic standing, and people are crying over this now. But they're still in the process of murdering more of them. So they can't seem to figure it out. Like I said, ignorance is one thing, stupidity is something else. And I think most people are, in most nations today, are eat up with stupidity. Oh, yeah. I'm not afraid to say it. I'm not ashamed of that. I'm not at all. Last night on our local news station, our governor, Governor Jim Justice, said he's going to tap into the CARES Act funds we have for this state to the tune of $50 million, trying to hire more nurses and staff for the hospitals. It's not because the hospitals are full, though all the beds are full, and they can't cover the patients, not at all. They can't find the staff to keep the beds open. They didn't mention they were quitting because of the vaccine. They didn't mention that, the jab. They didn't mention that. But that's what it is. And it's not just here, folks. It's all over the country and worldwide. U.S. hospitals pushed to financial ruin as nurses quit during pandemic. They say because the nurses are burnt out. That could be true in some cases, but I know it's true from people I know personally who have worked in the medical profession who have quit rather than take the jab. Across the country, hospitals are buckling under the strain of nursing shortfalls and the spiraling cost of hiring replacements. For Watsonville Community Hospital on California's Central Coast, those costs became too much to bear and contributed to the facility's bankruptcy this month, according to a person familiar with the situation. The hospital went belly up. The shortages are most acute at hospitals like Watsonville that rely on government funding to treat poor patients since they have fewer resources to compete against the rising cost of keeping staff. The situation adds to the stress as facilities have already experienced responding to the early onset of the virus, just as the last of federal aid is being doled out. This is like survival stakes, says Stephen Scheel, a head of healthcare practice at the advisory firm BDO USA. Winners are whoever is highest on the food chain and who has the biggest checkbook. The staffing companies, agencies that provide nurses and other staff on a temporary basis are really, really, really gouging hospitals. Yeah. St. Joseph's Episcopal Hospital Chief Executive Officer Jerry Walsh, has been on the losing side of those battles, beat up by a larger, wealthier systems while laying out thousands of dollars a week more to pay what he calls exorbitant rates to outside agencies to keep his hospital properly staffed. St. John's is in a remote center corner of Queens, treats some of the city's poorest and sickest patients and relies mainly on less lucrative government-insured patients. Folks, this is a, I guess you could say, a healthcare nightmare, and this is facilitated purposely. The pain spreads beyond nurses. Report by human resources firm Mercer this year estimated a shortfall of 3.2 million lower-wage workers, such as nursing assistants and home health aides, by 2026. Employers will be also need to hire more than 1.1 million registered nurses in that period, Mercer said. Walsh said his hospital is also struggling to fill lab, respiratory therapist, and administrative positions. People, by the grace of God and common sense and knowledge, will not take the jab, and the hospitals are closing and lose. They're actually, some going out of business. Many cannot take patients in, not because the beds are full. They can't staff the hospital. Should that tell us something, folks? Should that tell them maybe somewhere in the past we goofed up, and should we understand now that this COVID hoax is destroying the world economy? And still, in this America, destroying health and the health of millions who can't even get elective surgery when they need it because they can't find the staff to work with them. Didn't I tell us something? We murdered 75 million citizens of this country, brought in millions of illegals. Shouldn't we learn this lesson, don't you think? Or are we just plain stupid? No longer ignorant. You just heard the truth. I just told you the truth. So you can't claim ignorance any longer. No, you can't claim that. You can claim stupid, but not ignorant. Texas militia, sanctioned by sheriff, seeks government support to halt flow of migrants. Now, this, folks, this is what a militia is all for. Yes, militias are constitutional and biblical. I can prove that. I wouldn't say it. They were that. Militias are citizens, private citizens who are there to protect communities and the borders of their states. So this Texas militia is doing the right thing. Is sanctioned by the sheriff and seeks government support to halt flow of migrants. The militia leader came before Valverde County commissioners at their regular meeting in this border town 200 miles west of San Antonio, wearing a straw cowboy hat, boots, and a t-shirt emblazoned with the American flag. He introduced himself as Samuel Hall, North Texas-based founder of Patriots for America. For the last 2 months, volunteers from his militia, which doesn't disclose the size of its membership, and coordinated with the sheriff of neighboring Kenyon County to stop illegal immigrants. The militia patrolled in shifts funded by donations. They approached ranchers in Valverde about running operations on their land, too. Hall hoped to win commissioners' blessings at Tuesday meeting. We're going to break. I'll finish up the break, folks. This is what private citizen commissions, or I'm sorry, militias are all about, protecting their homes, their communities, and their states and their counties. We need to go back to that.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
All right, folks, back to the final segment. And again, this is Pastor Butch Paul filling for Melody Cedar someday. She's usually here with me, but she's starting to take some Wednesdays off to take care of some business. You need to give her a call at 800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. And sign up for her free newsletter. If you like keeping up with the financial news, folks, you enjoy this very much. And there's nothing wrong with keeping up financial news because finances affect all of us. Oh, yeah, even the freeloaders don't work. If there's a cutoff, it'll affect them, too. Melody Sutram is a person I go to when I want to know something about finances or precious metals. That's who I go to, folks. Nobody else. I've tried others. I have. But she's been the best I've ever worked with in over 20-some years. 800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. Back to the article. The leader of the militia in Texas, he introduced himself as Samuel Hall, North Texas-based Patriots for America. For the last 2 months, volunteers, I didn't read that. So Hall hoped to win the commissioner's blessings at Tuesday meeting. We are expanding our operations, said Hall, 40. The militia has been demonized pretty well by the left. My goal and my objective before the commissioners is to let you know that our message is pure. We're not a bunch of guys that have a hate rhetoric. We're not a bunch of guys that beat our chest or have the wrong intentions or wrong message. We are a Christ-centered, faith-based organization. We're a bunch of believers. God bless them. God bless them. There's nothing wrong with the militia. The militia was meant to be there for that purpose. It's our fault we let it be pushed out of existence. But we have. And blame anybody you want to, folks. It's our fault. Phoenix approves $2,000 bonuses to vaccinated city employees. Phoenix is going to pay up to $2,000 for the employees to be vaccinated. $2,000, folks, for full-time vaccinated and city employees. $750 for part-time employers. It's going to cost them between $25 and $29 million to do this. Guess who's paying for that, Phoenix? I think you'll find that it's a common man and woman who's working for a living. You're going to pay this. I've never before in my life, and I've been here almost three-quarters of a century, I've never before in my life seen something that's good for you, that's supposed to save your life, seen something that's so good for you, people have to be bribed to taking it. Never ever in my life. I mean, I haven't in my life. I've been here a while. But listen to this. We all know this Pfizer and some others are causing blood clots and heart problems, right? In people who take the vax, who take the jab. Pfizer is buying a cardiovascular biopharma company for $6.7 billion. They're going to hold all the profits. If they're going to give you the heart problem, then pay to help cure you. I mean, that you pay them to help cure you. Isn't that amazing? Pfizer is about to buy Arena Pharmaceuticals for $6.7 billion. Arena is a biopharmaceutical company focused in part on cardiovascular inflammatory medicines to a global patient cohort. And majority of mainstream news outlets have focused their report on Arena's bile disease treatment while failing to mention the firm's cardiovascular research. Utah-based Arena has existing partnerships with United Therapeutics, who focus on the research efforts on pulmonary arterial hypertension. So Pfizer's decision to acquire Arena and their relationship with the United Therapeutics is certain to net the company more in return than the bowel disease treatment touted by the corporate press. Let me repeat that. Pfizer's decision to acquire Arena and the relationship with United Therapeutics is certain to net the company, more in return than the bowel disease treatment touted by the corporate press. Wow. Talk about a monopoly. Isn't that amazing? What a coincidence. Pfizer is going to get into cardiovascular business. Gee. COVID-19 vaccinations have also been heavily linked to cardiovascular issues such as myocarditis, especially in young men. Though a majority of the mainstream news media reporting has focused on Moderna's mRNA vaccine for COVID-19 and links to myocarditis, Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine has also been linked to heart condition. I wonder why they're buying up a company so they can sell medicine for heart issues. What a sweet company. They want to make sure if they kill you, that they give you a heart problem, they want to make sure they're going to help you. Now, that's a good company. Would you agree? And we, of course, are way too smart to be deceived by that, aren't we? I think we are. Microchip implanted in your arm could track your COVID vaccine status with just a cell phone scan. A Swedish company is creating a microchip that could be presented as a way to confirm one has the COVID-19 vaccine. Microchip technology startup called Epicenter is creating a microchip that will be implanted under a person's skin. We rely on existing near-field communication, NFC, to send data regarding one's vaccination status. A microchip the size of a grain of rice can be implanted under your skin to help provide your vaccination status. According to a South China Morning Post tweet, the chip is implanted into your arm and can verify your vaccination status when placed next to the NFC. Imaging showing your COVID-19 passport with just a flash of your arm. The video starts while showing a person holding out his arm and scanning it with a mobile phone. I do want to share one article here before we run out of time. It's a little bit lengthy, but I think it's important because it ties together something we all been talking about, the supply chain. This article is entitled, is by James Rickards. It's called The Great Supply Chain Collapse. And I got a few minutes. I'm going to take my time and try to read slowly because I think you're going to want to hear this, folks, because this supply chain issue is far more complex than most of us understand. What's the root of the supply chain breakdown? That's a critical question, but the answer is almost irrelevant. The supply chain is a complex dynamic system of immense scale. It is of a complexity comparable to the climate as a system. It exceeds the combined processing power of every computer in the world. Most people have some notion of how supply chains work, but few understand how extensive, complex, and vulnerable they are. If you go to the store to buy a loaf of bread, you know that the bread did not mystically appear on the shelf, delivered by a local bakery, put on the shelf by a clerk. You carried it home and served it with dinner. That's a succinct description of a supply chain, from baker to store to home. Yet that description barely scratches the surface. What about your truck driver who delivered the bread from the bakery to the store? Where did the bakery get the flour, yeast, and water needed to make the bread? What about the ovens used to bake the bread? When the bread was baked, it was put into clear or paper wrappers of some sort. Where did those come from? Even that expanded description of supply chain is just getting started in terms of a complete chain. The flour used for baking came from wheat. That wheat was grown on a farm and harvested with heavy equipment. The farmer hires labor, uses water and fertilizer, and sends his wheat up for processing and packaging before it gets to the bakery. The manufacturer who built the oven has his own supply chain of steel, tempered glass, semiconductors, electrical circuits, and other inputs needed to build the ovens. The ovens are either handcrafted, engineered to the order, or mass-produced, made to stock in a factory that may use either assembly lines or manufacturing cells to get the job done. The factory requires inputs of electricity, natural gas, heating and ventilation systems, and skilled labor to turn out the ovens. The store that sells the bread is on the receiving end of numerous supply chains. It also requires electricity, natural gas, heating and ventilation systems, and skilled labor to help the doors open and keep the merchandise in stock. The store has loading docks, back rooms for inventory, forklifts, and conveyor belts to move merchandise from the truck to the shelf. Every link in this chain requires transportation. The farmer relies on trucks or rail for deliveries of seeds, fertilizer, equipment, and other inputs. The oven manufacturer also relies on trucks or rail for deliveries of its inputs, including oven and components. The bakery and the store rely mainly on trucks for deliveries of their inputs and the finished loaves of bread. The consumer relies on her automobile to get to the store and return home. These transportation modes have their own supply chains involving truck drivers, train engineers, good roads, good railroads, rail spurs, and energy supplies to keep moving and keep deliveries on time. This entire network, farms, factories, bakeries, stores, trucks, railroads, and consumers, relies on energy supplies to keep them working. The energy can come from nuclear reactors, coal-fired or natural gas-fired power plants, or renewable sources fed to a grid of high-tension wires, substations, transformers, and local connections to reach an individual user. Everything described above sits somewhere in a complex supply chain needed to produce one loaf of bread. Now take everything else in the grocery stores, fruits, vegetables, meat, poultry, fish, canned goods, coffee, condiments, and so on, and imagine a supply chain needed for each one of those products. Then take all the other stores in the shopping center, home goods, clothing, pharmacy, hardware, restaurants, sporting goods, and imagine all the goods and services available from those vendors and supply chains behind each and every one of those. In case you think I've the components and steps to making a loaf of bread in the above example, I didn't. The example above is a grossly simplified description of the actual supply chain. A full description of the needed supply chain would reach back further. Where do the seeds for the wheat come from, and branch off in tangible directions, which do the bread represent, or where do the original bread wrappers originate. A full description of the loaf of bread supply chain with choice of vendor analysis, quality control tests, and bulk and purchase discounts, among other decisions, decision tree branches could easily stretch to several hundred pages. Now consider all the supply chain links and possible bottlenecks described above are purely domestic. But very few supply chains are actually that local. CEOs, logistics, engineers, consultants, and politicians have spent the past 30 years making supply chains global. You've heard discussion of globalization since the early 1990s. What one may not have realized is that the process that was being globalized was the supply chain. You know, your iPhone comes from China. Did you know that the specialized glass used in the iPhone comes from South Korea? Did you know that the semiconductors in the phone come from Taiwan? That the intellectual property and design of the phone are from California? The iPhone includes flash storage from Japan, gyroscopes from Germany, audio amplifiers from battery chargers, display port multiplexers, batteries, cameras, and hundreds of other advanced parts. It's kind of complicated, don't it, folks? In total, Apple works with suppliers in 43 countries on 6 continents to source the materials and parts that go into the iPhone. 43 countries, folks. 6 continents. That's a quick overview of the iPhone supply chain. Of course, every supplier in that supply chain has its own supply chain sources and process. Again, supply chains are immensely complex. Once the global perspective is added, we have to expand our transportation options from trucks and trains to include ships and planes. That means ports and airports are additional links to the chain. Those facilities that have their own links and inputs, including cranes, containers, port authorities, air traffic controllers, pilots, captains, and the vessels themselves. And to our list of trucks, trains, and ships and planes, we could add pipelines to transport liquids such as petroleum, gasoline, and natural gas. You get the idea? Supply chains may be hidden, but they're everywhere. They're interconnected, densely networked, and unimaginably complex. The touchstone of these efforts was an idea of a just-in-time inventory. If you're installing seats on an automobile assembly line, it is ideal if those seats arrive at the plant the same morning as the installation. That minimizes storage and inventory costs. The same is true for every part installed on the assembly line. The logistics behind this are daunting, but can be managed with state-of-the-art software. All these efforts are fine as far as they go. The cost savings are real. Supply chains are efficient. The capacity of the system is to keep a lid on the cost demonstrable. Supply chain revolution since the 1990s has been about cost reduction, which gets passed to consumers in the form of lower prices. That practically explains the entire phenomena. There's only one problem. The system is extremely fragile. When things break down, everything gets worse at the same time. One missed delivery can result in an entire assembly line shutting down. One delayed vessel can result in empty shelves. One power outage can result in transportation breakdown. In a nutshell, that's what's happened to the global supply chain. There's a lack of redundancy. The system is not robust to stocks. The shocks that occurred, nevertheless, pandemic, trade, war, China, U.S., decoupling, bank, collateral shortage, and more, and the system has broken down. The failures of it has cascaded. Delays in receiving commodity inputs in China resulted in manufacturing delays for exports. Energy shortages in China resulted in further disruption of steel production, mining, transportation, and other basic industries. Port delays in Los Angeles have resulted in component and finished goods delayed in the U.S. Semiconductor shortages have resulted in production of electronics, appliances, automobiles, and other consumer durables that they rely on automated applications. You've seen how complex the system is. The bottom line is, if supply chains are breaking down, the economy is breaking down. If the economy breaks down, the breakdown of social order is not far behind. And the cost of low social disorder are far higher than any possible savings from supposedly efficient supply systems. Folks, this is a real well-written article that shows we are just a glitch away from the economy being totally disrupted and shut down, and then perhaps the results of that could be war, famine, who knows. This is a true scenario in a very well-written article by James Rickards on how fragile our systems of livelihoods are around the world. Folks, the melody will be out of the office the rest of the week. No more live broadcasts. We're back with you Monday. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your family. Bye-bye. I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.